Hold on, it's coming. Everyone, welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I am in the studio tonight for a very special guest. Sebastian Rotella has written a new book called Rip Crew. It is one remarkable thriller. I think you're going to really enjoy reading it. He is published by Little Brown. But let me tell you a little bit more about Sebastian. He is an award-winning journalist, an author, a foreign correspondent, and an investigative journalist. His first novel, Triple Crossing, was named Favorite Debut Crime Novel and Favorite Action Thriller by the New York Times Sunday Book Review. Pretty impressive. He is now in the third book in this series called Rip Crew. It just came out in March, and I'm very, very fortunate to have him with me tonight. However, I want to just tell you a little bit more about him. He's a senior reporter at ProPublica, an award-winning foreign correspondent and investigative reporter. He worked for almost 23 years with the Los Angeles Times before joining that publication. He covers international security issues, including terrorism, intelligence, organized crime, human rights, and immigration. He's been around the world, and it's absolutely amazing, every place that he's gone to. He's written extensively on terror in Europe. He has been on a Frontline documentary that was a finalist for Investigative Reporters and Ellis Editors Award. He also has won a Peabody Award and other awards for an investigation he called Finding Oscar that was heard on This American Life, one of my favorite shows ever. It's an honor and a pleasure to welcome Sebastian Rotella to the show. Sebastian, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you so much for being with me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
My goodness, you've got quite a list of bona fides there. I have to say, I could go on and on and on. I've been reading your bio and your Wikipedia and everything else. You were a Pulitzer finalist. You've done it all. You are just a writing crazy man, aren't you?
It's been, you know, I've been putting in the work and the years, and I do as much as I can with, you know, to the extent I can get up the energy, you know, both the journalism and the book writing. So it keeps me busy.
Well, let's talk about the most important thing right now, and that is your new book called Rip Crew. I've read the book. It's pretty amazing. It's really fast-paced. The reviews are terrific. As a matter of fact, Kirkus Reviews, who never gives anybody a good review, said, "It's about as tightly woven and rock solid as international thrillers gets. Rotella's latest is a tense, gritty thriller, perfectly seedy when it needs to be and near perfect in its overall execution." Congratulations on that. I see my friend Alifair Burke has also given you kudos as well. Geez, not too shabby.
I'm very excited about this book.
I bet you are. Let's talk about the book for a while. Would you give everybody kind of the elevator pitch?
Sure. I mean, it's the third in a series, but it can certainly be read on its own. And there's one recurring character, Valentine Pescatore, who in the first book was a Border Patrol agent, a young Border Patrol agent. And this one is a private, kind of a globe-trotting private investigator who gets recruited to work for Homeland Security on kind of a secret investigation of a massacre of migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border, something that sadly happens now and then, a massacre of migrants from Africa. And that story converges with another one, another character who was in my first book, also Leo Mendez, who's a He has a job description which actually is more realistic than it might sound in Mexico, which is that he was a journalist and a human rights activist and became a cop, and now he's back to trying to be a journalist. And he's investigating a case of corporate corruption in the United States, and those two stories converge and then take us, you know, as all my books do, I think, as you said, they're international thrillers, so hopefully take the reader, you know, on a journey into both, you know, literally and figuratively around the world and into these underworlds of smuggling and mafias that make that experience of migration, you know, as fraught and as dangerous as it is. And a lot of it actually happens right here in the U.S. and hopefully looks at some of the kinds of crime and the way that the legitimate and criminal economies blur together in dangerous ways. So that's,
you know, it seems to me you've got a lot of these interwoven stories that actually fit seamlessly in there, but these are ripped from the headline stories. These are things that are happening every day. Even though your books are fiction, are you drawing on your inspiration from what you see in your other life as a nonfiction writer?
Absolutely. I mean, as much as it is very much fiction, and as much as, you know, it's a story that I came up with, which is based on a lot of different experiences and characters and things I've seen, there's no question that it's very informed by reality, in the sense that if I write about the Mexican border or the southern Mexican border with Guatemala, where the migrants, you know, make that desperate trek on the top of freight trains, or I write about in this book about the island of Lampedusa in Italy, where a lot of migrants come from on smuggling ships from Africa, or the areas where that the Neapolitan mafia dominates in southern Italy, where there's big African migrant communities. All of those are places I've been to and where I've reported, and I've spent a lot of time, you know, on the ground and on the streets and getting to know. I have a lot of sources, as you can imagine, after more than two decades doing this in law enforcement and intelligence, and I've learned a lot from them. And everything, you know, all that knowledge and all that experience and both the big story and the small details hopefully give it a real sense of authenticity. And so, as you say, it is, I mean, I try and stay away from directly talking about politics because there's enough of that going on outside the borders of the book.
Sure.
But I think if somebody reads it, they do get a sense of, hopefully, of how those underworlds really work in kind of an in-depth and up-close way.
Right. You know, one of the things that strikes me as interesting, excuse me, just had to plug in my headset again. Sorry, just had to plug in my headset here. Are you still with me?
I'm with you.
There you go. Okay, sorry. I detached from my headset there. We talked in the green room before the show, and I was kind of jokingly say, you know, I had a journalism scholarship and all, and I thought, oh, I can't be a newspaper reporter. I'll be poor all my life. And however, there are the who, what, where, when, and how of it all. And do you think that knowing how to write in the nonfiction investigative way that you do has helped you with your fiction writing?
It's a very good question. In some ways it has, in some ways it's a hindrance. A hindrance in the sense that you have to get out of the you have a different voice in fiction, and you can really sort of explore and different approaches and all that much more in fiction, and you develop a different voice, and sometimes there are constraints, it's unstyle and all that in journalism. But obviously it's a big help in the sense that, number one, beyond all the, you know, what you learn from the reporting and what I was talking about before, in terms of the actual approach, you know, you get, when you write a lot of journalism of the kind I have, which is more in-depth, you are always crafting stories and looking for the right details and being very sort of acute in your focus about what you can say and how you can say it and how to best organize the story and best, particularly the stories I do, which are, you know, about things like terrorist attacks in India or war crimes in Guatemala, to tell the story in a way that does justice to the drama of it, but also, you know, conveys a lot of information in a way that people can digest about an issue they might not know that much about. And so a lot of that goes on in my novels too, you know, so in that sense, yes, I think it's the discipline and the rigor of being a journalist and you know, and is important. And as a foreign correspondent, particularly, you really have to train your powers of observation and analysis in places that are unfamiliar. And a lot of that remains. It's almost like a net in which you catch things, and those images and those emotions and those sensations and those faces and voices stay in that net. And when you return to it to write a book, to write fiction, you can really sort of mine that wealth of knowledge and use it again, you know, and tell some of these stories in a way that's more satisfying, because you can go much more in depth and really get to some of the human details, the kind of things that a newspaper story might be a sentence or two, but that if I were to sit down with you at a bar and talk to you about it, it would be the first thing I would tell you about, and we would talk for an hour about it. You know what I mean? Some of the human,
right,
the human side,
right,
of all,
right,
these things.
I want to kind of take you back to when you discovered that you liked writing so much, Sebastian. When was that?
I have to tell you, I mean, ever since I can remember, I think in second grade, I always liked reading, even then, like the Iliad and the Odyssey and the Three Musketeers and you know, little kids' mystery stories. And I wrote, in the second grade, I think I wrote a series of little short stories about a detective. And ever since, that was always, you know, that was always something that writing and writing mysteries and writing fiction and writing about adventure always appealed to me, both reading and writing. And so I've always had that interest in both fiction writing and increasingly in journalism, partly because, I mean, when I was in college, I didn't end up studying journalism. I studied English literature. And there was the kind of that, and I studied fiction with a couple of writers, including Jim Shepherd, who's a great short story writer and novelist. And I was trying to decide whether to go into journalism or to go to, you know, do like a Master of Fine Arts program, you know, study fiction writing. And journalism appealed to me more because of this idea that it combined, you know, the idea it combined the world of academia and study and all that, but also the world of the street, you know. And there was something about being out,
yes,
on the street, particularly in my case, because I wanted to be a foreign correspondent, that really appealed to me, because I, you know, my parents are immigrants from Spain and Italy, so I spoke languages and I always had traveled a lot, and so that really, and I'm glad I did, because, you know, ultimately it gave me much more. Not just material, but experience, you know, human experience to write about, you know, in terms of what I've seen in different places around the world.
You have a worldview that most people will never have and never experience. When you look at your first book and you now look at Rip Crew, what differences do you see in your writing style as an author, not as a journalist? Do you notice changes or differences in the way you write?
You know, it's a good question. I've been thinking about that. I mean, I think what I did work on particularly hard in Rip Crew, and I think that's part of the evolution as a writer, is being, even though it's still a story that you know, moves around the world and has kind of a sprawling quality to it and interweaves two narratives because there's two heroes. In comparison to the first two books, I think this book is particularly kind of tight and focused, you know, and I think that's something that you're going to learn, you know, and I like all three of the books, but particularly in the first one, I was writing about the Mexican border and South America, and I had all this wealth of knowledge stored up, and there was really the temptation to, you know, just put it all in there, and you always have to rein yourself in a little bit. But I think in this book, I've learned that, you know, it's a little more focused, a little more lean, I guess is the word, you know, or sculpted.
Yes.
And then I think that, you know, and I think that's what a writer, you know, is constantly, you know, a lot of what you learn, you're teaching yourself. And one of those things is, you know, this question of choice, you know, you can't, when you're describing or in dialogue, you know, how can it be tight but still satisfying? So I think that's probably this book, as a writer, I think that's one way I was able to evolve, is maintain the kind of scope and the kind of, hopefully, the richness of detail and of personality, because I like books that have a great deal of description, and I think the subject matter lends itself to it. But this one is perhaps a little leaner and tighter and more focused than the others, or at least my style is.
Well, let's talk about that, because to me, fiction is either driven by storyline or by character. What do you think your books are driven by?
I think character, in the sense that I think I have to start with character and a sense of place, you know, and storyline comes because I have a lot of sort of stories in the subject areas I'm interested in this, and like say in this book, both the question of migration, but also mafias and people who fight against mafias in places like Latin America or Italy, you know. So I've got to know people like that, you know, and I can build characters off of them. And to me, if I get the character and I get his voice and I get his worldview and I get his, you know, in this case, his quest or his mission, to me drives sort of the storyline. And again, and the kind of play, you know, the landscapes I want to explore, you know, whether they're, you know, literally physical ones or the subject matter. So the second novel was much more about international terrorism, which is something I've spent a lot of time on too, you know, in Islamic terrorism in Europe and the Middle East. And this one, it was this question of these different places that seem far away from each other, like a favela in Brazil or these tough mafia areas in southern Italy. But, you know, hopefully in the book I show how they connect to places like Southern California and New York and Washington, you know. And so the story, to me, comes out. I think there was a film director, I think it was Wim Wenders, the German film director, who said, you know, what's important are the characters, and the spaces between the characters is what the story grows out of. And I thought that was actually a pretty good line. You know, I think that's the way my thought process works. My thought process works a bit like that when I'm coming up with a story, you know.
Well, so, you know, let's talk about film, as a matter of fact. Are you interested at all in screenwriting? Or would you like to see your books turned into film? It's interesting to me that some authors are very protective of the characters and don't want to have anybody write those characters for the screen, whether it's the large or small. They're too afraid they'll be, you know, not shown properly. Are you interested in doing something different like that, a different kind of writing?
I mean, I am, and I think, you know, what's happened with I've written the three novels and a fourth book, which was a nonfiction book about the Mexican border back in the 90s, and all four of them have been optioned for either for film or for television. And the first three didn't end up getting made, though, and for one case, I actually, you know, how options work, you get paid, and in one case, I actually wrote a screenplay for one of them. And the one right now, the Convert Song, the one before this one, is actually at the stage where a script is being written by Dan Pine, who's the showrunner for the Bosch series on Amazon.
Yep.
He's writing a script for my second novel, The Convert Song. And I'm very excited about that. And I think I am interested, particularly if it can be working off the world of the book. I'm not so protective of the characters that I, you know, obviously when you turn a book, particularly into a movie, maybe less so with a series, because now with TV series, you can do more justice to a book. But if you turn a book into a film script, you're going to have to tighten and condense and boil things down and bring out some of the conflicts. But I think if you're working with the world of the book, that at least gives you a sense of control over the world of the film. So yeah, I am interested in that, and I'm excited about this project in particular.
How wonderful. What are your other writing interests, Sebastian?
In terms of what other kind of books I'd like to write, you mean?
Anything. What do you want to write?
I'm sort of, you know, you talk about a book that's been published, you're probably working on the next one, and that's true in my case, too. I mean, I really liked writing this series and following this one character, Valentine Pescatore, in particular, who's in all three of them, because he's a young character and he grows and evolves through the three books. And so there's always a temptation to keep going with that character. I'm actually, the next book I'm going to write about a different character, because I wanted to write more about someone who's older and at a different level, who can be, because in a lot of my character until now was someone who gets kind of caught up in, because of his youth and because of his sort of his rank, so to speak, gets caught up in stories. And I wanted to write something about someone who has more experience and sort of works at a higher level of in a hierarchy. And in this case, it's going to be a federal agent. So I'm going to do a book returning more to the world of terrorism, and I'm working on that now. But I think, you know, in terms of what appeals to me, I mean, because I have reported a lot of very dramatic stories, you know, like terrorist attacks or human rights abuses or war crimes. I mean, I've they're stories that when you write about them as a journalist, it's almost like the first draft, you know? And if they've really stuck with
wow.
you, they become raw material for coming back to it and really exploring them and really conveying much more fully, you know, what those worlds are like. So that's what drives me as a writer. You know, I mean, that's some of these experiences I've had. In this book, for example, in Rip Crew, one of the things I really try and bring out is something that I've experienced both among fellow journalists in Latin America, police officers, prosecutors, some of whom, you know, sadly have died because they were honest and brave, but what it's like to be someone who investigates against very tough odds in a corrupt place, the forces of crime and corruption, not just their exploits, you know, not just the action, but the psychology, you know, and one of the things I really
yes.
try and bring out in this book, in the character of Mendez in particular, is like, these are people who also have families and kids and go to their son's soccer game and try and maintain a semblance of a normal life, but they have to live surrounded by bodyguards and accompanied by this sort of crushing awareness and realization that they've chosen this life where any, you know, any day could be the day that the people who've sworn they're going to do away with you are going to do it, you know? And so I wanted to give, I'm fascinated by that and I admire people like that. And I wanted the book to be a tribute to that. So that's the kind of thing that sort of pushes me to write a novel, to write fiction. And that's one of the things in this book, I think, hopefully, that I really explore. And I think, you know, there's action in the book, but I don't think it's gratuitous action. I think, you know, it's based on, say, we're not giving anything away. There's a particular shootout that is very much inspired by a couple of shootouts that people I know were in, you know, and that I covered, that I talked to them about what it was like, you know, that I went to the scene. So hopefully there's a sense of realism and authenticity when somebody reads it that it's not just, you know, a shoot 'em up. I mean, that you really get a sense of what it's like and what people like that are going through.
You know, I was trying to put my finger on who it is that you put me in a frame of mind for another author. And I just looked up on one of my bookcases and I realized who it was. You are, because you talk a lot about the problems with Mexico and the crime and everything. And I realized that a lot of what you write reminds me a lot of Don Winslow, who is fascinated by the Mexican cartels and, the havoc that they wreak. And I mean that in the very best possible way. You know, he's just a terrific author. And so you very much remind me your style of writing, the realism, the grit and everything, and you actually having witnessed it reminds me of Don Winslow. So I hope you take that as the compliment it's meant to be. I want to be self-indulgent a little bit. I mentioned at the beginning of the show that one of my favorite programs on NPR is called This American Life. You wrote a story called Finding Oscar that won a Peabody Award, a Dart Award, and two awards from the Overseas Press Club. Will you please talk a little bit about that? And excuse me if I'm being a little selfish, but I really want to hear this story because I love that program so much.
On the contrary, how could you be selfish if you're asking me to talk about my work? I'm happy to do it. And actually, that's a good one to choose because that story is so dramatic that it could be fiction. And we actually at ProPublica we did this documentary on This American Life and an hour on the radio, and then we wrote our own e-book, a short book. In which we took the approach because of the material where we actually pulled a lot of the normal attributions and language you would use in a typical journalism story or article and put them in sort of in footnotes. And so we could strip away some of that and really just tell the story as almost a literary journalism tale, which I think it lent itself to that. But in a nutshell, the story is remarkably dramatic because it's about a young, illegal but otherwise incredibly law-abiding immigrant in Boston who's 33 years old, has four kids, minding his own business, working two jobs, just trying to survive. And he gets a call from a prosecutor in his native Guatemala where he hasn't been for, you know, 15 years. And the prosecutor basically tells him, this is going to be difficult for you to absorb, but we have strong reason to believe that you are not who you think you are. We think that you are not the son, as you think, of a heroic Guatemalan military lieutenant. But you are actually, you were the survivor of a massacre of a town during the Guatemalan Civil War in the early 1980s, where 250 people were killed, and you're one of the only two survivors, and we think that you were one of a family where your eight brothers and sisters and your mother were killed. But the soldier who you think is your father took you home and raised you as if you were. And they had been investigating this case for 15 years, tracked him down. He got pulled into this incredible, you know, discovery, which included finding out that he had a real father who had survived the massacre because he had been in another town. And so he actually was introduced to a father who also thought this son was dead. And you can imagine the kind of tale we had to tell, because we also went down to Guatemala, investigated. We talked to the survivors. We talked to this guy, Oscar, the guy in Boston. We talked to some of the people with the soldiers who had been arrested, because they were people arrested both in Guatemala and in the United States, because some of them had come to the United States too. So you had both the victims and the victimizers who had come to the United States. And
yes.
So as I tell you, I mean, when my editor told me about, we had just gotten this tip and said, are you interested? I said, if what you're telling me is true, I'm incredibly interested. I couldn't, you know, if I was to sit down and write a novel, I couldn't write something that dramatic.
Right.
And so that, and it ended up being just this remarkably compelling tale, which we were able to tell both as on the radio, which, as you know, This American Life is a wonderful show and has a remarkable, huge and dedicated audience. So they got to
yes.
hear it, write it. We got to write it in, you know, I got to write it in a more literary way in this ebook. We also did it in Spanish. So that was, you know, which had a lot of impact. But it was a really remarkable, moving and interesting tale, which obviously has informed bits and pieces of, you know, things I've written about, you know, in my knowledge of Latin America and how those investigators work and things like that. But it was a really peak moment in a career, you know.
Well, congratulations on the Peabody, and I'm going to go to the archives for This American Life and listen to it. I want to kind of change it up a little bit right now and talk about you. What do you like to do for fun?
What do I like to do for fun? I mean, I like music. I like to listen to music.
What kind?
I like
Tell
jazz.
Me about you.
I like jazz.
Uh-huh.
I like jazz. I like Latin music, obviously, because both the sort of culturally and also because I've spent so much time in Latin America. I like Bruce Springsteen a lot. And I'll tell you an anecdote. The reason I like Bruce Springsteen is when I was covering the Mexican border in the 1990s, Bruce Springsteen did an album called The Ghost of Tom Joad. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And I was in my late 20s, early 30s. And I had loved Bruce Springsteen growing up as a teenager, as many teenagers do. And, you know, was really into him and all that. So he had a great impact on me, both his music and his lyrics. And it turned out that on The Ghost of Tom Joad, and I ended up being invited to the concert and meeting him, he wrote two songs on The Ghost of Tom Joad based on my coverage of the Mexican border. So it was like this
really?
Full circle thing. Yeah, the one song is called Balboa Park, and the other one is called The Line. But because he was living out in Southern California and he was doing research, because all those songs in The Ghost of Tom Joad, most of them are about migrants, and several of them are about that the immigration experience. And so, and I was covering the Mexican border, so he was, you know, doing research with my stories in the L.A. Times. So anyway, so that's the kind of, I like Bruce Springsteen, in addition for because he's a great musician, because of that connection we had. I like travel, obviously, because I've traveled so much for work. You know, I mean, it's always a pleasure to travel, and I have family and friends in different parts of the world. But you know, I work pretty hard because I got between the day job. You know, I'm an investigative journalist, and I mainly investigate foreign stories. So I do a lot of traveling for work, and then, you know, on nights like a thief, and weekends I'm working on the fiction. So I spend a lot of time working. I really do.
Are you a very dedicated author? Do you sit down and devote part of your day to writing fiction? Or do you grab it in bits and pieces when you can, considering your day job?
Considering my day job, to the extent I can, when I'm working on a book, I do try and impose discipline, though, you know, it can't necessarily always be the same time every day, because especially if I'm, you know, working on a story, or say, you know, I get a call and there was a terrorist attack in Paris like there was in 2015, and I have to go to France,
right,
and, you know, spend several weeks there or whatever. But to the extent I can, I try and impose discipline. And I find it's almost like a sport or you know, that sometimes just getting up that energy when you first start, you do it for 5 minutes and you're overwhelmed. But when you hit your stride with the book, you know, you develop an energy even if you think you're tired, and you can't wait to get back to it. So it for me, it's very much because I'm doing it, as I said, in these windows of time, there's a rhythm that builds. But it's very, you know, I mean, the important thing for that is, perhaps more than people who are full-time writers, it's important to me to really have worked out at least the big picture of the story, you know, ahead of time.
Interesting.
You know, and what the other thing that happens, frankly, that's kind of funny, because I really enforce the border between the two worlds. When I'm reporting, I'm reporting, and when I'm writing fiction, I'm writing fiction. I'm not thinking about one when I'm doing the other. But it is true that when I'm in the middle of a book and I'm working, I come back to the book, it's almost like your subconscious keeps working on the novel, and things that you had sort of stopped thinking about sort of consciously, you sit down and you realize you have kind of solved them, that it kind of evolved, you know, so the writing process is kind of going on in a mysterious way, even when you're not doing it, at least in my case.
Are there other creative people in your family, Sebastian?
Yeah, actually, and that's why I mentioned music. My mother's family in Spain were all professional musicians. They were my grandmother and her two sisters were a classical music trio in Spain, and my grandfather was a pretty well-known pianist and composer and conductor. Now, this was Spain after the Spanish Civil War, which he fought in, so things were tough. So he also learned to play jazz and sort of, you know, and play piano in bars and, you know, whatever else he had to do to survive. But yes, there was a big musical tradition in the family, and an academic one. Parents are people who, you know, became professors or academics, and one of my brothers is as well. So and my brother Carlo, and if I could just make a plug for him, is a professor at Boston College, but also a very fine writer of nonfiction, and he writes nonfiction books about boxing American culture. And so there is quite a bit of, he's a serious author, and I don't, you know, that's the good thing about being a professor of American studies. You can write about boxing and the blues and cities, right? Not every discipline.
There you go.
That,
so you sound like you have a very interesting and diverse family. That's wonderful. What would we be surprised to learn about you? You know, I've read your bio on Amazon, and I've read your Wikipedia, and I've read your ProPublica, and everything there is about you I've been reading. But, you know, you never dish it all right at once. So, learn about you. Tell me.
What would be surprising?
What would we be surprised? Yes, what would we be surprised to learn about you?
Well, I guess if people who haven't known me since I was young, people who sort of know my career, know me through my bylines, sometimes they think that I'm of a foreigner, that I might not be American or might be foreign born, but you know, they don't necessarily know that I'm a kid from the South Side of Chicago. You know what I mean? I mean, my parents, obviously, I've grown up in this international environment and speaking languages. And I've worked overseas a lot and all that, but I am I'm very, very proudly first generation American in that sense. You know, my
family. Oh, wonderful! That's a great thing.
So that's important to me. Yeah, no,
that's,
I'm being, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. But I mean, I think
it's a great thing.
Right, and I still, it's funny because even though I have not lived there for a long time, I still feel, you know, you come. Where you were born and where you grew up has a great impact on you, even if you then leave it. So, you know, being from Chicago was very important to me, and I think had a big impact on me both, you know, in terms of particularly wanting to be a journalist, because it's a city that has such an interesting mix of cultures, of both high culture in terms of opera and the arts and great literary and architectural traditions.
Oh,
but also has
Chicago is a hub of fabulous authors. So, good for you. Will you tell
it also has a serious, you know, tradition of crime and corruption and gangsterism and all that is very much part of that reality too. And frankly, learning about that as I grew up, I think prepared me for some of the work I've done and the fiction I write too. I mean, that makes it
absolutely.
So,
tell everyone where they can find you on the webs, please.
Well, I've got a website that is a work in progress, but right now I have my little brown page, which is going to become a full-fledged website. And obviously,
They can also, if there's interest in the journalism, ProPublica, we do mainly in-depth projects, so my projects can be found on the ProPublica website. I've done, as I said, because we do in-depth investigative journalism and the public interest, I've done three Frontline documentaries, which you can find on the Frontline website as a writer or correspondent about terrorism overseas. And I've done both that Finding Oscar ebook you mentioned and another one about another nonfiction one about terrorism in Pakistan and India. So I'm kind of spread out there amongst both different countries and different disciplines.
There you go. Sebastian Rotella, it has been just an honor to be talking to you. Congratulations on all your journalistic work, but just as important to me is congratulations on the success of your fiction. I hope you'll come back when you write your next book and it's released. Will you please?
It will be my pleasure. I'm looking forward to finishing the book and being able to talk to you about it.
Let's do that. We'll make a date for sure. Folks, Sebastian Rotella, the books is Rip Crew. You can find it in bookstores everywhere. It's published by Little Brown. And if you want, you know, the Big A, you can go there and order it online or in any of the other locations. I actually have an extra copy. So the first person who drops me a note on my Facebook page at Authors on the Air, I might just send you Sebastian's book. So, Sebastian, I wish you the best of luck. Please stay safe when you're reporting. I know journalists everywhere under fire, a lot of crazies out there, but you're, you know, telling important stories. Thank you so much. And thank you for the joy of your fiction. It's been an honor to speak to you.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much and have a good night. And that's our show, folks. Thank you for being with me. I'll be back next Wednesday at my regular time. I hope you have a great weekend. Read a good book. Thank you. And thank you, Mom and Dad.